Thank you, everyone, for standing by. This conference call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect your line at this time, and you may begin.
Thank you very much, Laurie. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the CCI call on the 29th of May, 2012. On the call today, we have Cheryl Langenau, Tobias Mahler, Olivier Crépin-Leblond, Michael Graham, Jonathan Zook, and John Berard. We have Rosemary Sinclair joining us very shortly, and Steve Del Bianco will join for the second hour of the call. We have received apologies from Jonathan Robinson and Carlos Aguirre. And from staff, we have Barry Cobb, Julie Headland, and myself, Natalie Peregrine. I would like to remind you all to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you.
Hello.
Hi, Rosemary.
Hey, do you want to take the lead of walking through continuing through the document?
Rosemary's just joined by the sound of it.
Yes, thanks, Cheryl. Hi, all. Sorry about that.
Are you on the hands free, though, Rosemary? We're all keen to know if you've beaten the technology.
No, because I think the hands-free is only activated when I actually put the handset back in the cradle of the phone. So I'll need another model.
That's bizarre. Okay. If you know anyone in the telco industry here in Australia, they might be able to help.
They might be able to recommend something.
Sorry, guys. Couldn't help it.
All right. We'll press on. Sorry about the delay, everybody.
Rosemary, this is Barry. I went ahead and got the call started for us, and I was just getting ready to go through the action items.
Okay, great. Well, let's do that, Barry.
Great. The first action item was to update the next version of the comment survey form with the USG comments. That has been completed, and that's what you see before you, and I sent out to the list last week. So now this tool has all comments. And a big thank you to Tobias for sending me a version of the PDF that I can cut and paste directly the comments so we won't lose translation with my summarization.
Mm-hmm.
The second action item is to create a draft for the PowerPoint that we'll use for Prague. I've started a template, but I haven't really put much substance into this yet until we get until we nail down our final definitions and some of our metrics, which may affect a little bit of the content of that. But I'll try to have the version out to the list by the end of this week so that we can start to work on that in parallel with the draft advice letter. The last thing I'll say is we've only got two more sessions until the 12th of June. We've got one session scheduled for 5 June, which I suspect, given the quantity of comments that we have to review, we'll probably need most of that. And finally, in terms of trying to construct the next version of the advice letter, I suspect, given our time crunch, we may have to finalize this over the list. Or if the working group makes the decision to postpone the final submission, given some GAC input and those kinds of things, that date may change, but we'll find out about that soon. The only other action that I'd like to discuss before we get back into the public comments, and because we have John Berard on the call, not to put a spotlight on you, John, but just if you could, can you give us a quick update about the GNSO Council and the deliberations with respect to this working group's actions and our work products and interaction with the GAC?
Sure, Barry. This is John Berard. I had requested the work of this group be added to the GNSO Council GAC agenda for Prague. I don't think that it has quite made it there yet, and in lieu of that, we had put forward a letter for GNSO Council Chair Stefan to send to the GAC, which essentially would let them know that we're working on this and general framework of where we were and soliciting their participation. And now today, there's activity on the council list that suggests, at least suggested by Jeff Newman, who's vice chair of the council, that the subject needs to be considered by the council before a letter can be sent. I have responded with the point that we're not straying outside the scope of the work of a working group and soliciting input, and in fact we're doing some political spade work in terms of letting the GAC know that the GNSO and the council shares its concerns. I don't know. I haven't seen any fallout from that. That all occurred about an hour or so ago, and as it develops, I'll keep you posted. But at this point, I don't have confirmation that we're either on the agenda or that Stefan is sending that letter that we had all agreed and he agreed was well worth sending.
Great. Thank you, John. This is Barry. Just to add on to that, what's going on is when Rosemary sent the letter out to Stefan, of course, it hit the council list and it was distributed amongst the council list to provide any input or negative feedback with regards to the content of the list. Mm-hmm. Stefan had suggested that discussion about the letter would be sent on the consent agenda, but that was rejected, as it was felt that there needed to be bigger council discussion, not so much about the content of the letter, but more about what the working group itself has done, doing, and the contents of the advice letter itself. With that, there was already a pretty packed agenda set for this coming GNSO council meeting, and there's debate as to whether there'll be enough time to adequately allow deliberations around this topic to fit in the agenda item. And so if it doesn't make this next council agenda, just like what John had said, then there's probably a chance that the letter won't be able to get sent until the council has a chance to deliberate a little bit more. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to make sure and give the working group a heads up as to where we stand in that respect.
Right, and again, this is John Berard speaking. In suggesting that the discussion needed to be held prior to a letter going, Jeff Newman said that the letter seemed to suggest that there already had been some consultation, that there already had been some agreement reached, at least on the framework of things. And my point to him was that he was misinterpreting the letter, it was totally within the scope of the working group's activities to suggest, and that there were some, as I said earlier, some political reasons why it was a smart thing to do. So we'll see how it plays out.
Mm. Okay. Well,
Rosemary, Cheryl, here. You've got a minute.
Sure. Cheryl, sorry.
My sigh is in the record for the chat. I certainly understand the points, the perspectives of trying to put things into very packed agendas. I've had a little bit of experience with packed agendas in my years, and I have no doubt that I would lose absolutely no sleep at all over whether or not the discussion point made it into a GNSO council and GAC interaction at the prior meeting. So that's just neither here nor there. I am a little crestfallen, I suspect, is the kindest way I can put it, about the perspective taken, at least by the executive in the GNSO council, on the update note. But it is what it is, so there you are. I suggest it's just sort of tough shit. However, I think it would be appropriate for the GNSO to be made aware then. Notice I said the GNSO, won't you? That depending on the earlier awareness raising with the GAC was a tool we as a work group were planning on using to encourage and ensure a earlier product output. In keeping with things like the ATRT recommendations of earlier GAC involvement in such things, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, blah, 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 we can write all of that as you like, you know, we regret any unavoidable delay to our own work plan because I don't want to be have the work group being put between a rock and a hard place on this. I mean, nothing we can do about it, you know, tough.
Yeah.
We don't have to go quietly down the black hole.
All right. Well, can we mull that over and just come back quickly to it at the end of the call? I recall another episode where GNSO Council, it was a couple of years ago, was very exercised by some communication that was felt at the time to be out of scope, but I think subsequently settled down. So I guess that's the backstory on this reaction. But we've had, you know, some individual members of GAC express interest in the work. So it may be that some more interest comes from that direction over the next little while. And perhaps now that there's been some focus on the letter by GNSO Council members, others will read the letter and perhaps not feel quite so exercised by its contents. So if we could just come back at the end of this meeting, I'll make sure we've got time to just see whether we do want to take some follow-up in response to this time frame that we face, and then we can follow that up or just come back to our next meeting. So, all right, well, why don't we, as usual, press on with this work?
Rosemary, this is Barry. Real quick, just to follow up with that, I don't want to give the impression that any of the dialogue going on the council list will undermine this topic being an agenda item on the weekend session in Prague and with the GAC. I do fully believe that those will still continue. It's just more about the letter itself.
Yes. And that was the situation the last time there was such discussion about the letter. The work actually continued. So. All right. So, Barry, could you remind us now where we're up to in the public comments?
Yes, Rosemary. Thank you. This is Barry. So, as I mentioned, all comments have been loaded into the review tool now. And at the conclusion of our last call, I believe we had stopped somewhere around consumer trust metrics. But we agreed that with the USG comments that we'd go ahead and start back up at the top, just quickly review through those that we've completed until we come to the next comment that we hadn't addressed yet. So give me a couple of minutes. I'll run through these that are at the top that we completed until we get to a fresh one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the first one again was the ALAC comment based on the consumer definition. And the working group recommended that we add a specific note to that definition on page 4 to include the concern with respect of the use of consumer. The second was one of the comments from the Costa Rica session, which wanted a delineation between registrants versus professional registrants. The working group determined that there'd be no action because our definition covered them all. Moving into the consumer trust definition section, number 3 and number 4 are essentially the same comment, but from two different documents from INTA. And again, it was the working group had agreed that we would refine the definition from what it states now is fulfilling its proposed purpose to fulfilling the registry's proposed purpose. So that covers both 3 and 4. The 5th comment was from Bruce in the Costa Rica session. And essentially, after the working group deliberated, I think that the action is that we're going to include another note with respect to this definition, denoting that some members of the community indicate that consumer expectation should be included, but that also applicants of new GTLDs were only responsible for what they state in their application. So when we start to draft that particular language, we'll highlight that within the next advice letter and make sure that we're capturing that comment correctly. Comment number 6, which is a continuation from Bruce's comment, was with respect to consumer trust. And the general takeaway that the working group needed to modify the tone within the advice letter, that we are just measuring this data and not recommending any actions by ICANN or any other party with respect to the data. And the better that we made that clear would help draw that delineation between the measurement versus action. And, okay, moving on to number 7. This was the comment from Ray Facet out of Costa Rica. And he wanted to define a consumer trust and with respect to question 18 of the application in terms of defining trust. There was much dialogue across the working group as to how we should go about approaching this. And the takeaway that I got was that within our list of metrics, we don't have a single delineated metric that specifically calls out answers by GTLD applicants within their application for the new GTLD itself. And so I think the overall action here will be to create a new metric within consumer trust that states to analyze answers by GTLD applicants for their particular strings. And just as I alluded to earlier, when we add that to the next version of the advice letter, we'll highlight that to make sure that we capture that appropriately, because we all did agree on the working group that it wasn't just question 18, but it's really a plethora of the answers within the application as to the promises and the services that they intend to deliver to meet that expectation. Comment number 8 was also from Costa Rica, and this was from Evan. And this is with respect to the scope issue around ICANN and the use of the DNS. And the working group agreed that we needed to improve upon the few paragraphs that we already have in our advice letter and more explicitly state that it's going to be very difficult to measure and to truly define when the DNS is in use and when it's not with respect to scope for ICANN. Comment number 9 was from Rudy Vansnick out of Costa Rica, and this created the dialogue with the session that we had with the compliance team. But essentially, the working group agreed that there needed to be 2 additional metrics added to consumer trust, and specifically calling out complaints that are submitted to ICANN for registries or registrars, and those will be added as well. Just as a quick follow-up on this based off of our last session, I went back and listened to the MP3 to try to uncover what the exact action items were for compliance regarding these 2 metrics and all the metrics in general. At the end of the dialogue, there really wasn't any particular action item for compliance to come back with, but the long of the short was that there was a specific discussion that certain metrics based off the USG comments perhaps be added to the InterNIC form for ICANN. We've had some dialogue between last session and this session, and understanding that dialogue is that request really immediately falls within implementation, but yet this the advice itself hasn't been submitted to the ICANN board even. So it's really difficult for ICANN to go and implement those things, whether it be for tracking or for any other purpose. But more importantly is, even if we could wave the magic wand and add those to the complaint form, there is a considerable amount of work as to not only would we, what would occur with monitoring that data, but there actually has to be a resolution passed in creation of those. And some of those requests may fall outside of ICANN's scope. And so there needs to be thorough analysis done before those types of changes can be added. So to tie a bow on this part, in collaborating with compliance, at the end of the week, we'll be submitting a response back to the working group. Basically, it'll state that we take note of these particular requirements. It kind of falls within an implementation issue at the present time, but there is parallel work and budgeted work effort that will complement this overall metrics package. And in response to Cheryl's question, yes. Sorry, I'm running through these, but I just want to get us to the new ones. All right, so that's the first nine. Any questions or comments before we move into a fresh one? That was really fast recap of what we had covered in our previous session.
Any comments from anybody? If not, then let's move ahead.
Great, thank you. So comment number 10, this is from Ray Fassett back in Costa Rica as well. This was still within respect to the dialogue of consumer trust. And Ray's summarized comment here was that given the effect of consumer trust, should any metrics be measure if or about ICANN as being a contracted party here as well? Jonathan Robinson had responded in the session, and that stating that that was a useful perspective because ICANN has to fulfill their promise as they are a party to the contract as well. I don't have the exact transcript up in front of me, but it was a very short dialogue in response to that. But in the short is, you know, should there be metrics within our metric package here that monitors ICANN activities as well?
Rosemary.
Do we have examples of, I'm sorry, this is Jonathan Zook. Do we have examples of complaints on the ICANN side of things that would be worth monitoring? Is there a way to make this more concrete?
This is Barry. I don't know of examples right offhand, but I would think that the kind of the world is your oyster. Think about various ways ICANN is involved in the operations of the DNS and whether they contribute to consumer trust, choice, and competition. And I could imagine that there could be metrics that maybe even already are tracked today. I don't know for sure, but if not, I'm sure there are some metrics out there that may contribute to this.
Rosemary here, in some senses, this could take us back to the whole discussion about compliance and the performance of the compliance function, in terms of creating an environment in which there can be high levels of positive consumer trust. So I'm not sure, though, that beyond the metrics that we've been suggesting already, that there's anything I can think of that would add to our view of ICANN as an organisation providing a supportive framework for consumer trust.
Uh,
So perhaps our response at the moment is that we're understanding the comment, but not sure what practical action can be taken. Jonathan?
I guess the consumer trust piece would probably center around consumer-facing aspects of ICANN, which would be the compliance and the potentially ombudsman functions of the organization, because most of the organization isn't consumer or more broadly registrant facing, except those two areas. So maybe there's something related to response times. But I think there's actually some of this already built into the metrics that we have. If we're talking about registries continuing to perform the function that they laid out for themselves, because that will be part of the enforcement function with them. If they, you know, if they suddenly change their business model, then they'll be out of contract compliance, and that'll give ICANN the opportunity to make sure that's the case. And they'll need to do their job for that consistency to happen. So there's already some ICANN-related metrics, I guess.
Okay. Well, perhaps if we just note...
Sorry, Cheryl here, Rosemary.
Yes, Cheryl.
I just wanted to respond to Jonathan's point in the chat where he suggested the compliance and ombudsman response times. I'm aware that certainly the previous ombudsman was concerned about those particular metrics. And that he also had issues with a response time, or in some cases lack of response, with the ICANN board reacting to specific recommendations he made to improve situations that he had identified. It might be worthwhile for, rather than to sort of dive in and try and second guess, to ask what, if any, systems or measurements the new ombudsman is collecting, is interested in collecting. I mean, he's got the ability to do a full rebuild, and I think he possibly may be exploring some things. So there might be something there that could be looked at without us getting into a cart and horse situation, such as we did with compliance. In which case, we could easily ask him to give us a quick briefing on that.
Yes, that's good. Thanks, Cheryl. The other thing that I was thinking, Rosemary here, whether we could just actually make this point a little clearer, the point being... ICANN's own performance as the other party to the contract. So if we make the comment a little clearer, and I think that's what was intended by the comment, then what becomes clear from that is that we're looking for those tools of governance that ICANN uses to manage its own performance as a contracting party, which takes us then to perhaps an annual report by the Ombudsman, an oversight of the compliance activities. There are different sorts of metrics, I think, than the other metrics that we've been talking about, but nonetheless, you then get some ways of oversighting ICANN's performance, even if the time frames are variable. And I'm not sure what we do about 3-year targets. Are there any other thoughts about that? Or perhaps we could ask Barry to try to capture that in our recommended action column.
Rosemary, this is Barry. Basically, I have just that, is that within the next version of the advice letter that while we may not point out specific metrics at this time, that as a general statement, you know, that we do recognize that ICANN is a party to these contracts as well, and that there may be certain metrics or performance attributes as the organization as a whole that may be worthy of investigation.
Mm-hmm. That captures it well, I think. All right. So when you're ready, Barry, we could go on to the next point.
I'm just taking notes one more second, please.
Yes, no problem.
Okay, the next comment is number 11, which is our first one for the United States government. And this is with respect to the definition of consumer trust. And I'm going to read through the proposed modification, and I won't read through the revisions to the note as they're quite lengthy. But then after we read it, we'll open it up for dialogue, and then we can dive into the details. Okay, the proposed modification, which is kind of a combination of our existing definition and then USG appended to it. Consumer trust is defined as the confidence registrants and users have in the consistency of name resolution and the degree of confidence among registrants and users that the TLD registry operator is fulfilling its proposed purpose and is complying with ICANN policies and applicable national laws. I believe that's our version. Their appended element to this is consumer trust also includes the confidence registrants and users have in the overall domain name system, and in particular, registry operators and registrars' efforts to curtail abuse, including respects for intellectual property rights, avoidance of fraud, crime, or other illegal conduct, as well as confidence in ICANN's ability to enforce requirements imposed on registrars and registry operators. Consumer trust must be assessed together with consumer choice and competition to aid in determining the overall costs and benefits incurred by consumers and other market participants from the expansion of GTLD. And I'll just point out that this last sentence of this proposed definition is consistent across all of our other definitions, and the USG takes the position that all three of these must be considered together or assessed together to do a thorough analysis.
And there was a third dot point. That was it, was it? My recollection of their comment, sorry, was that they wanted to add a third dot point.
Yes, indeed. That's the note.
Right, correct. Yeah, that's the
got
notes.
It. Okay. Jonathan.
Sorry, I had to turn the microphone back on. I mean, I guess I'm concerned about taking our neat grid and turning it into a mishmash at the request of the USG. I mean, we've got a good way for people to look at individual metrics and make it less abstract than the idea of these need to be taken in together. I mean, the fact that we're creating a document with all three, I think, takes them all together, and we have areas in here that look at certainly intellectual property protections, and I don't know. I think we should try to find ways to look at individual metrics from this list as opposed to responding to a call to restructure what it is we're doing, which I feel pretty good about.
Mm-hmm.
That's my two cents.
Okay.
If there's some way to look at fraud and crime or illegal conduct as a metric, which I think in some measure we're doing through our compliance metrics.
Fine.
I think a lot of this is already there. The more I think about it.
Cheryl here. I agree with you, Jonathan, but I think it's the USG wanting to see it let me start that sentence again. I agree with you on two levels. Let me go for the easy one first. The repetitive sentence of consumer trust must be assessed together with blah, 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 right? I understand where they're coming from, but I agree with you absolutely. I don't think it actually belongs in the definitions of trust, choice, confidence.
Right?
I would be happier if a recognition of that was wordsmithed into an overarching statement pre-metrics and analysis and target work in our advice letter, with a recognition that that particular assessment is, of course, the job of the review team.
That's right. I think the idea will be to take a holistic view of this.
Yeah, our job to do that. It's the review team's job to do that.
Right. Our job is to come up with some data that they might use to build into
exactly.
their
So I think that one
analysis.
We can sort of deal with it and remove that off each of them, but deal with it in a slightly different way by putting it in a recognition space and punting it to where it belongs, which is in the formative work of the review team yet to come. However, I have no problem with the additional expansions, in some cases, that they have suggested for the other definitions, because they are specific to metrics we already have. It's kind of gilding the lily, in my view, but I don't have a problem with gilded lilies, especially when it is a clear indication that we have listened and heard to input. I also am very aware that that second part of the second sentence, my screen is so small I really can't tell if there's a comma or a full stop somewhere in there. But anyway, the bit that goes on about ICANN's efforts, etc., feeds in perfectly to the issue we were talking in point 10. And I just wanted to highlight that one of our responses to point 10 raised by Ray in Costa Rica would be in the recommended action to note the modification to our definition of trust. So it's kind of nice, in my view, of the US government to have written a perfectly reasonable response to answer not only their input but that of others. Thanks, Rosemary.
Thanks, Phil. Okay, so in terms of what we do, are there any other comments? Jonathan, did you want to come back in?
I think I agree with that assessment. I mean, I'm just always worried about, you know, there's one thing that's a gilded lily, and the other is to create a definition that we haven't created measures for. We just need to be careful of that. I mean, I think this whole thing is my case, a personal crusade against the kind of abstract evaluations that have plagued ICANN over the years. And so I just don't want to see an expansion of the actual definition that becomes too abstract. But I certainly agree with, in the introductory text, conceding the need for a holistic view of this when it's ultimately evaluated by the review team ensuring that USG understands that we read and considered these suggestions. I think that's very important.
Jonathan, Cheryl, back again. I think we are, in fact, measuring enough with the metrics in the table we have for this definition.
Rosemary here. Sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. This was Michael. I was going to jump in.
Go, Michael.
And I think I agree with both Jonathan and Cheryl. I think the last sentence in the proposed definition really is an admonition more attuned to the advice letter in requiring or suggesting that the need for a holistic review, hence it's not really appropriate in a definition. And then also I think the same might be said of the first part of that, that as you, Cheryl was just saying, this is an admonition from the GAC that these are considerations that should be made in determining consumer trust. Whether or not it's really part of the definition, I would question, certainly part of the admonition to the review team that this is something for them to review. And I think whether or not the metrics as already proposed covers these, all of these subjects that the GACA is asking us to look at already is something that we should keep in mind in going through those now.
It's going to come back with later. Sorry, Cheryl here. I get very excited about this. My apologies. It's going to come back to us anyway. It will be the GAC advice. We can pretty well guarantee that, you know, Suzanne is going to be holding the pen very strongly on the GAC advice. So, you know, forewarned is forearmed, guys.
Rosemary here. When I look at this, I actually see a number of different things all included in the paragraph. So perhaps if I can just step through it. The first point, which is the encouragement for us and indeed everybody else who works with our advice to make sure that that people are looking at the overall domain name system and not to get too lost in the long grass, so to speak. So that first couple of lines in the paragraph, I think we're saying they go in the kind of front of the advice letter in some way. Then we get to a very particular point, which exercises the GAC on an ongoing basis, bearing in mind, of course, the point that Cheryl has just made. This comment is from the US government, not actually from the GAC, but the point is expressed in particular registry operators and registrars' efforts to curtail abuse. That's the nub of the point that's being made. Forgetting for a moment the examples, and so we have a number of metrics that go to registry operators and registrars' efforts to curtail abuse. Then they go to the next step, which is to include a number of examples, intellectual property rights, fraud, crime, or other illegal conduct. And we do deal with a number of those, but not others of them, although our particular approach is the inclusion of the phrase applicable national laws actually picks up a number of those. Then we go to another separate point, which is about consumers' confidence in ICANN's ability to enforce the requirements that have been imposed on registrars and registries. So, again, we're back to compliance. So compliance is in this frame, whether it's now or whether it's later. Then we go to quite a separate point, and I think this is a point which raises a question of scope, and we actually have to be quite careful about this last sentence, which says consumer trust must be assessed with consumer choice and competition. We don't have any problem with that because that's our task. We to look at consumer trust, consumer choice and competition together from the board resolution. But the last bit, our task is to look at whether the new GTLDs promote consumer trust, consumer choice, and competition, the U.S. government's point goes to assess whether those things aid in a determination around the costs and benefits. And I think that's a separate point. Our task is to look at the expansion of the GTLD space and see whether it promotes consumer trust, consumer choice, and competition. This note is suggesting that we look at consumer trust, consumer choice, and competition to determine whether or what the effects are on the costs and benefits incurred by consumers. So I think we're going to have to pull this paragraph apart and respond to various bits of it in differing ways. Jonathan, did you want to come in? And then I've got Tobias in the queue. Perhaps if we go.
Sorry, that's my hand. I left my hand up from the last one.
Okay, fine. Thank you, Tobias.
I just wanted to support this is Tobias. The last point you mentioned, Rosemary, about this being out of scope. I looked at the affirmation of commitment, and the text actually says that the review by ICANN should be broader than the part we are looking at right now. In section 9.3, it says, if and when the new GTLDs have been in operation for 1 year, ICANN will organize a review and examine competition, consumer trust, and consumer choice, as well as the effectiveness of the application and evaluation process and safeguards put in place to mitigate issues. So basically, if we combine all of these, then perhaps we get closer to what the U.S. government wants us to do here. So I would say it's somehow in scope for the AOC review, but out of scope for this particular working group. Thank you.
Yes, absolutely. That was Cheryl in rampant agreement, sorry.
Thanks, Cheryl. So, Barry, would you be able to just unpack this point in the way that I have suggested, probably having to go back to the transcript, I guess, because it's quite a lot to deal with, I know. And then perhaps in terms of Jonathan's point about the clarity of the tool that we're using, perhaps if we just drop out the revision to note one and focus on responding to the individual points, but unpacked so that we get 4 or 5 points, not one lumpy paragraph, because of the need to respond in different ways to the different parts of that paragraph.
Rosemary, Cheryl here. We do need, however, to still deal with their proposed text for the notes. When you said ask Barry to slip that out, I just wanted to make sure it was still captured, that's all.
What I'm thinking is that once we unpack the paragraph, then, and we certainly do have to discuss this, but it seems to me that the note, and in fact, I thought we had agreed that the essence of the note, which is overall confidence in the domain name system, ought to go into the front of our document rather than into our definitions and metrics. Tobias?
Yes, I'm not sure if I followed all that was said while I was looking at the AOC, but perhaps one way of unpacking this would be to take this part of the overall domain name system, so the trust in the overall domain name system, include that into our definition. And basically not include the rest of the paragraph that is double underlined, but rather have that as part of an addition to the notes.
Yes.
So that would be the third point under note one. So this way we would basically take the point on board but not have an extensively lengthy definition. Thank you.
Okay. So, Barry, are you clear on what we are asking you to do?
Possibly. This is Barry. I guess first and foremost is, you know, based on the review of public comments process, we don't owe a response back to any one author. What we do owe is the working group deliberating it and then coming to some form of consensus as to whether we agree with the comment or not.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in reference to how we move forward, if I've captured this appropriately, it sounds as though, and this is prior to Tobias's comment, is that we would capture the essence of what they're trying to say here in the summary or the beginning aspects of our advice letter, but that it wouldn't change any of our actual definition. Or the second version is what Tobias has just mentioned, and that is to slightly modify our definition to include the overall domain name system or confidence of registrants and users have in the overall domain name system, and then the remainder of the suggested comments be added as an additional note for consumer trust. So whichever which way the working group wishes to go there.
Cheryl here, just in response to Barry's understanding, I just want to be really clear. What I was suggesting is to accept is almost what Tobias was saying, I would suggest. But I was very particular about taking the whole of their first sentence,
mm-hmm.
of the USG's first sentence, that is, including the bits that were talking about fraud, crime, illegal contact, etc., etc., and having that integrated in. If we can wordsmith it into less words, then that's fine too. But why I was mooting that way is I felt that that also picked up and satisfied the concerns raised and discussed in Costa Rica with the Fawcett and Ray Fawcett and Jonathan Robertson intervention.
Sorry, Cheryl, Rosemary here, in terms of ICANN as a contracted party?
Yes, in terms of ICANN's part of it.
Yes.
I was killing two birds with one stone.
Right. Okay.
Because it did actually identify, you know, ICANN's ability to enforce.
Okay.
Yeah, I just wanted that clear because Tobias' suggestion is a much more narrow version than what I was proposing, and I want to make sure that we all knew that there was a couple of options.
Yeah. So if we just follow Cheryl's suggestion for a moment, then our definition would read, going back to our definition, consumer trust is defined, et cetera, et cetera. A registry operator fulfilling its proposed purpose and is complying with ICANN policies. And at that point, we would put something in about ICANN enforcing its own policies.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and applicable national laws, including, and then we go to the list of fraud, crime, or other illegal conduct.
Yes, that would pass perfectly well.
Okay, I've got the right sort of construction there.
Yep.
Now, so others might have a comment about that now that we're clearer on Cheryl's suggestion. Tobias, I've got your hand up.
I just wanted to emphasize that we're actually looking at two different aspects. One part is to keep the definition still readable and not to add too many details there. And the other thing is whether we, in fact, agree with the content of the suggestion. And mm-hmm. perhaps there is a way to keep the definition readable without taking in all these details. In fact, the U.S. government basically repeats itself in the
yep.
two paragraphs that are double underlined. And in the first version, which they wanted to have in the definition, there's also a mistake, because they speak about efforts to curtail abuse, comma, including respect for intellectual property rights. I would not count that as a... it's a bit strange formulation, at least. It's much better in the next version, where they say curtail abuse and ensure respect for intellectual property rights.
Mm.
So that would basically give us one justification to take it in once rather than twice, and select the formulation that is slightly better crafted. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Tobias. Okay, now the other suggestion I think I'm getting is that we take the expansion and put that in a note in our advice letter, which would then allow us to be a bit broader. The construction of that one would leave our definition pretty much as is, but we would have a note that says that expands complying with ICANN policies to include ICANN's own enforcement and compliance activities, and that applicable national laws would include respect for intellectual property rights, avoidance of crime, fraud, etc. So all that detail could be in a note, so that, as Tobias is suggesting, our definition remains relatively simple. In responding to this comment in our tool, we can be confident that a number of these individual points are actually picked up in metrics a little further down in our work. And at that point, I'm meaning registry operators and registrars' efforts to curtail abuse, although I think we've got slightly different examples. We've not got a metric, for example, on people's efforts to curtail crime. Although we do talk about, and now I'm mixing up two things that ought not be mixed up, talk about phishing and spam and the like later on.
Yeah, but that Rosemary Sherrill here, the crime and the legal stuff, I just had that bucketed under the applicable national laws.
Because
what's illegal conduct in, you know, my space might be different to, you know, something that's on the other side of another hemisphere.
Yes. So I think that's right, Cheryl. The best way for us to deal with it is to just link those instances to our point about applicable national laws, because of the variability that you do get amongst GAC members. Now, out of all of that, Barry, have you got anything you can work with?
This is Barry. I've got options. And for the given the time crunch that we're in, might I recommend, and if I'm correct, the two options are still somewhat the same, but they're somewhat different. Can we spread the load, so to speak? And Cheryl, can you maybe propose what your version is to the list? And Tobias, propose your version to the list? And we'll try to meet halfway on that amongst the list, and then we can determine the recommended action.
Okay, happy to do that, but when we move through, there's going to be a repetition, as far as I'm concerned at least. I'm only interested in tweaking into any of our definitions some of the early parts of each of their amendments. When it gets into the assessing together, that gets bucketed out to general text, in the advice letter, and when it gets to the specifics of some of the note revisions, a lot of that goes into, in my view, what is the review team's work, not ours.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll only play with the definitional text, is what I'm saying. The rest should be ditto, ditto, ditto.
Okay. And Tobias, are you happy to take that piece of work on?
Sure, no problem.
Thank you. Okay, thanks, Barry.
Taking a few notes here.
Sorry. Just let us know when you're ready.
Could you do Tobias and us a favour, although Tobias sent you the PDF? I would love to just capture the text out of that column. And, of course, I'm not having any luck cutting and pasting it at the moment from this. So do you want to just throw me the text in an email from definition of consumer trust down through?
Yes, I'll email it to you.
Thank you. Just being lazy.
Well, it's better that we all work with the same text, Cheryl. I think that's a really good idea.
Okay.
Almost there. Okay, great. All right, moving on. We start to move into the consumer trust metrics, which is a territory that we've already reviewed. So the comment number 12, which was from ENTA, and they were basically looking... So it was a specific metric that we had, and we were looking to adjust the language of that metric to include at least measure experiences with phishing parking sites, malware, and then there was also the modification about the registrant and internet user versus trademark holders and those kinds of things. So the recommended action is just to update the metric itself. Comment number 13, again, was from ENTA, and this is where we had our deliberation about significantly lower than relative incidence for our three-year targets, and I believe that applied to that one in general. And then comments 14, 15, and 16 were all relatively the same, and that was to remove the before and after language within the stated metrics, and that we'll be consolidating UDRP and URS complaints as they should be evaluated together. And also the clarification of what the relative incidence means, whether it be registrants, registrars, registries, or the number of domains, as well as ensuring that our three-year target stays declining over time. Moving on to 17, which was a new metric. And, Michael, I believe you had the action that you were going to come back to us with a litigation. That you were going to come back to us with a possible consolidated metric with respect to litigation around these.
That's correct. It's actually in two parts. One, consolidating it, and then also determining if there was a good means for obtaining the information upon which to base the metric. This is Michael, I'm sorry. And I did... put that forward to the small group that I was working with INTA. We were not able to come together before the Memorial Day weekend. I'm hoping to be able to get together Thursday or Friday of this week to put that together. So could, and I think, that, I believe that 17 through 20, is it not?
Yes, sir, it is.
Okay. To come back on those four then with the consolidated proposal between now and the next telephone conference.
Correct, yes. Okay, great. All righty. So that takes us 17 through 20. And then we're moving on to comment 21, again by ENTA, and the working group action was to modify the target to include significantly lower than incidence of relative incidence in legacy GTLDs. And then moving on to comment number 22, this was the registry stakeholder group comment, and more specifically, we were they were touching on the range of breach notices issued to registry operators and the plus or minus 5% of legacy GTLDs. There was an action for me to come back with specific numbers to help produce the working group's response. As we discussed, last week, there was only one registry breach notice that I could find, and that was sent on the 27th of February, 2011, with respect to .jobs. And then in terms of the denominator, I guess we need to understand what is most important to put here. Is it one complaint for every TLD, or is it one complaint for every registry operator? If it's the TLD, then it's 1 over 21. If it's by registry operator, then it's 1 over 16, both of which could affect the percentage.
Did you want a knee-jerk reaction from people there, Barry?
Any reaction, good, for starters.
I think we do, Cheryl, yes.
I'm on the school of thought that says one of the registry operators, not the TLDs, because that way we can look to the effect on our trust that will occur if, by some bizarre and peculiar reason, we have a less than perfect actor in that sector. That's my knee-jerk reaction. I haven't done a deep analysis on it.
Rosemary here. Yes, I think it's. I think you're right, Cheryl, that when we're thinking about these numbers and metrics, then we ought to go in the direction of where someone can be accountable, rather than, you know, living out there in esoterica. So I think I'd support that suggestion. Are there any other thoughts on that? Well, why don't we go in that direction?
This is Barry.
Yes, Barry.
So I think I see Steve coming online, so hopefully he'll be joining soon. But
I'm here, Barry. Thanks.
Oh. There he is.
Perfectly timed, mister. Perfectly timed.
So, Steve, we're reviewing back through where we left off almost, although we have been discussing things for an hour and a half or an hour and 15 minutes. We're just back to kind of where we left off last week with respect to the registry stakeholder group comment, which is line number or row number 22 on page 10 of the public comment tool. and if you are logged in. So I went and fetched real numbers. I could only find one breach notice for registries, which again was to .jobs on February of 2011. Then the question becomes, in terms of the relative incidence and the denominator aspect, do we consider it by the number of TLDs or by the number of registry operators? And within this current state case, there's multiple TLDs owned by one registry operator. Thus, it would be 1 over 16 versus 1 over 20. So that's kind of to bring you up to speed with the real numbers. Then the question becomes about what specific percentage do we actually come up with. If we use the number of TLDs, that basically gives us the 5% number. And if we were to use the actual registry operators, the denominator being a little bit smaller, then that's 6.25% as the target.
May I respond?
Please. Yes, Steve.
I believe the only way to count it is TLDs, not operators, because when the breach notice comes out, the breach notice is in regard to the operation of a contract. That's what it is. And .jobs had a contract to run that TLD, and it really doesn't matter whether the same vendor ran other TLDs. So I believe you can only go on the TLDs. Each is unique in terms of its contract provisions that are subject to breach notices.
Mm-hmm.
And I do remember at the end of the last call, Jonathan Zook expressed the concern that if you make breach notices indicative of a problem, would it be a disincentive for compliance to be aggressive in issuing breach mm-hmm. notices? Was that also covered today?
No.
And so if you use as the denominator the TLDs and not the operators, you're saying the number would be 1 out of 20, and that was a 2-year period or a 1-year period?
Basically, it could be either. I mean, there was only one breach notice over 2, but essentially 1 year. So it was one breach notice in 2011, zero breach notices in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
If we do it on a yearly basis, you're right. It's 5% within 2011, and then obviously 0% for 2010.
But then, for simplicity, if we stuck with 2011 and made it 5%, so one of the proposals, I guess, I'm looking at the screen, right, is that we might say that 5% of the total GTLDs in the new space would be the equivalent number in 3 years out. But that could be, what did we say it could be, as much as, what's 5% of?
100, if we assume that there's 2,000 TLDs.
Be 100 breach notices, and it would be hard to say that meant everything was working well. It might be indicative that compliance was really sharpened to the task.
Mm-hmm.
It might be a good thing for compliance and a really bad thing for the GTLD program. I don't know how we split that, but all that the registries really wanted to say is that with a low number, you need to have a margin, plus or minus margin, and plus or minus 5% on the 100 would say 95 to 105. That's all that plus or minus 5% gets you.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really think that scratches the itch the registry's raised. You see my point? If you apply the 5% to the 2,000 and you get 100, a plus or minus 5% margin is 95 to 105.
Yeah.
So that's not of any real benefit.
Hmm.
Can we talk about Jonathan's point in the chat?
Yes.
At this point? I think that's really interesting, Jonathan, that looking at the warnings rather than the actual final breaches.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think what we want to do is turn it into a measure of compliance, kind of, rather than a measure of, I mean, it changes what we're measuring in a way. It becomes a measure of compliance's willingness to take things all the way if people continue to be out of compliance. In other words, I would like to see the number of breach notices go up in the context of people that aren't paying any attention to the warnings, right? I think that arbitrarily saying that breach notices should go down is artificial, and that intention is captured elsewhere.
Okay, but how do we go from Jonathan's point to the comment that we got back from the registry?
It would render their comment moot.
Yeah, because we wouldn't be looking at it.
Okay.
And I think that if the registries knew that we were talking about 100 breaches, it wouldn't have been concerned about plus or minus 5% on 100. Mm. Pretty confident of that.
I think you're right about that, Steve. I just don't think it's a particularly useful metric in and of itself. Especially,
may I comment on Jonathan's point on...
It's also something they don't need to track along the way. I mean, if they decide later they want to go track, go see how many breach notices there were, they can go do that pretty easily.
Mm.
Yeah.
But the interesting statistic is, you know, the fluidity with which noncompliance leads to breach notices.
Steve?
Yeah, thank you. I take on point Jonathan's concern that we don't want to penalize the compliance department for doing its job.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, though, because the goal of the affirmation of commitments and the goal of the review team and even this entire working group is to assess not ICANN's compliance department, but to assess the new GTLD expansion. And so breaches that have occurred would be indications that the trust elements of the expansion have come under question. It would cause one to look at the data and say, wow, there have been 100 breach notices. And it would say, yep, we've got an issue with trust. We've had to issue 100 of these notices or warnings. A separate question would be, does that indicate that the compliance department's doing its job? That might be a positive. But I don't think we can let the compliance department motivations get in the way of the overall goal of our working group. It's really about the expansion program and not any given one department.
Cheryl here. Steve, I do absolutely hear and understand and indeed agree with what you've just said. But I also hear from the at-large community space that I operate in a lot that there is a lack of trust of ICANN and specifically its compliance department's ability, notice those words, it's all one sentence, ability to do the job that it needs to do in a new GTLD world. And I don't want that to muddy the waters either. It's not a big step for those same naysayers to suggest, and I think win some consumer support, that a measure that looked purely at breaches would possibly be finding a set of data that was skewed by behaviour in the avoidance of issuing those breaches. And I agree with you, a number of breaches could be measured in a positive or negative way. You know, fewer breaches at a certain time in a three-year run might show that the remedial work that compliance is doing is far more effective, et cetera, et cetera. But just in this first blush, I'd like to maybe look at what Jonathan is suggesting with fresh eyes, because it just strikes me as a possible workaround. We do have a number of people who collect statistics in our community. and their concept of what would define a lack of compliance is far more narrow and far more hyper-reactive than the average consumer would be using in a gut measurement of their trust in the overall domain name system. And I'd be a little concerned about that type of measurement muddying the waters equally.
Rosemary here. I think we need to try to bring this point to a conclusion. If we go back to basics on this, the comment from the registries wasn't that they disagree with the measurement, but rather about the actual metric that we put in, the problem being the very low base that we have. So can we pick their comment up and provide a bit of flex around the number, the plus or minus 5%, and again, we have to express that, I think, as a relative number to capture that point. If we've got 20 now and we go to 200, then, you know, suddenly having 50 complaints compared to one, we're still in the same space. But I think it's also important to capture the discussion we've just had about an increase in compliance activity, perhaps engendering more confidence in the system. That's a different issue, I think, than whether the number's plus or minus 5%. So Steve's reminding me that we do have relative incidents in our breach notices. So, okay, and bringing us back to what we're trying to deal with, whether it's relative to total TLDs or registries. Gosh. Jonathan, you've got your hand up?
Yes, I mean, I guess I was, I probably already put it in the text. I'm not sure that breach notices being high or low are necessarily indicative of an increase or a decrease of consumer trust in the program.
Yeah.
I mean, I could just easily see a scenario of individual consumer trust being built by a feeling that they were heard and that I had a bad experience, but at least the bastards got shut down.
That's right.
I don't know that an individual consumer is even aware of the number of breach notices there were. They look at the world in a more microeconomic way, and so that's why I guess I see the activities and the responsiveness and the aggressiveness of the compliance team as being a key feature in trust by individual registrants, and so that's why I think that statistic's interesting, and the actual number of breach notices. I mean, to say it's 100 feels like a lot, but with thousands of TLDs, it might not be a lot. It may be that we're going to need to cut, 100 of them out. It could be that that'll only be two registries or something, right? I don't know, right? I don't know that number is meaningful, I guess is all I'm saying.
Well, can we live with the registry's preferred position, which is that we go with plus or minus five of the legacy GTLD? Steve?
Thanks, Rosemary. I believe that we should clarify that we meant by relative to total TLDs.
Yeah.
And that when you look at the 2011 number, it comes up with a 5% as a comparable basis. And we understand from the affirmation that it is to evaluate whether that ICANN new GTLD expansion improved consumer trust, not maintained, but improved consumer trust. So we would say that a benchmark for measuring improvement would be to compare the relative incidence of breaches in the new space to that of the legacies. And then we would add a text to say that, given the 2011 experience, 1 out of 20 or 5% would be comparable. Therefore, an improvement would be breach notices of less than 5% or less than 100 on 2000. I think it's a complete footnote whether you say that it's 100 plus or minus 5.
Yeah.
I really don't believe that's what the registries were getting at, but I'm happy to allow that.
Yep.
We're talking about 95, 96, 101, or 102.
Mm-hmm.
Let's put that in there. Let's acknowledge and just give the registries exactly what they asked for. And then in the second round of comments, maybe they'll come back and say, well, now that you've put it that way, that's not what we meant.
Yeah.
Now, let me just conclude by saying I believe that right in the table and right in our document, we should point out this moral hazard of having the compliance department believe that they'll reflect badly on the new GTLD program if they do their job well.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to just acknowledge that in our document.
Mm-hmm.
So it's putting a big asterisk on this particular metric to say that considerations about the achievement of the metric should be balanced by an assessment of whether the compliance department has been responsive to complaints and aggressive in pursuing warnings all the way up to breach notices. And we don't want to penalize the organization for becoming more effective.
Yeah.
Okay? So, I mean, I think we can have it both, and it's easy to give the registries what they ask for, because 100 plus or minus 5 is fine.
Yeah. Okay. Barry, have you captured that? I think that was probably the clearest statement of the response.
Why we need Steve on the job, because
that's
always
right.
The clearest statement.
So we're doing total TLDs. We're using 2011 as a bit of a baseline, so to speak. So we're taking the 5% performance in 2011. We're going out 3 years, and we're looking at 5% of whatever the total TLD number is at that time, allowing the registries there plus or minus 5%. But the 5% is a benchmark, and we're actually looking for some improvement on that 5%. And then we're making a very broad comment about ICANN's management of compliance, and I'm just not sure what we really want to say here. We've got a number of comments coming from different directions which go to the issue of ICANN as a participant with a preferred outcome in this whole process, and that adds complexity to these deliberations. It makes the job of objectively measuring whether the expansion of the new GTLD program has promoted consumer trust, competition and confidence a tricky task. So I'm wondering whether, rather than put that comment here, it is another comment which needs to go in the introductory section of our advice letter. Are there any thoughts about that?
Yeah, I'm happy with that approach. Beryl, sorry.
Rosemary, here, because it just strikes me that it's at the core of that comment about ICANN as a contracting party. It's at the core of a couple of other comments. So we should pull it out. It's going to be a bit difficult to wordsmith. But if you could make a note, Barry, that we need to make a comment about that in the advice letter.
Sorry, Cheryl here again. That to some extent, recognising that one of the options in response to the USG input would be to highlight in the body of the advice letter those aspects by perhaps even, depending on which way we might go, and a recognition of that in our definition of consumer trust. That also gives us an opportunity to react and respond and to, in some ways, take into account that set of comments.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that we do have a clear recognition that
mm-hmm.
there is more than just one interested party in the outcomes of these measurements.
Mm-hmm. So, Barry, are you clear on where we're up to with this particular point?
Yes, indeed.
Okay. Well, when you're ready, we could go to the next one.
Okay, comment number 23 is a redo of the same one in 22. This was just what Chuck brought up in Costa Rica, so we'll move
mm-hmm.
past this one.
Mm-hmm.
Comment number 24 from the Registry Stakeholder Group in the Public Comment Forum. Finally, in reviewing the overall approach, we note that consumer trust will be based not only on industry participants and their activities within the market, but also on the behavior and operation of ICANN. Industry participants and consumers all need to be able to rely on the stable, secure, and predictable governance of the critical internet functions that ICANN is responsible for overseeing. Any additional metrics which can deal with these functions would be welcome.
Rosemary here. In fact, this is the very point, isn't it? And we earlier, for Steve's benefit, discussed ICANN governance and metrics that might be available. I'm actually wondering whether this couple of sentences from the registries is actually captures the issue and could be used in the early part of the advice letter. Are there any other thoughts on that? Are people happy with my suggestion that we take the first two sentences of this and at least in the first draft of our advice letter we use those words, those actual words?
This is Michael. I would agree with that. I think
mm-hmm.
gets to the point pretty quickly.
Okay, and we've got Cheryl and Jonathan supporting that. So, are you
clear
on that?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, definitely.
Yep. So, are you clear, Barry, on where to go with that one?
Yes, got it.
Okay, good.
Okay, the next comment is number 25, which is from the United States government.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this is within the consumer trust metrics section.
Mm-hmm.
I'll read the first sentence or the first paragraph, and then we'll move down into the types of metrics that they're proposing.
Mm-hmm.
USG believes without revision, the proposed measures will be inadequate to make proper assessment under either the original proposed definitions of consumer trust, choice, and competition, or under the definitions as we propose they be modified. The USG therefore recommends the expansion of the metrics in a number of ways explained below. Overall, the metrics for each of these three definitions are interrelated and should be considered comprehensively to determine whether the benefits of the GTLD expansion outweigh the cost.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps I should just go ahead and read these other paragraphs real quick. Consumer trust measures. The scope of the survey that is proposed in the table of measures on consumer trust should be significantly expanded. First, the survey should not be limited to consumers and should not be limited to information before the new GTLD expansion. Rather, the survey should also include registry operators and registrars as well as other entities such as law enforcement entities, which may incur costs as a result of the introduction of the new GTLD. Second, the survey should also request information about the experience of consumers and others included entities both before and after the introduction of new GTLDs. The survey should seek information about specific costs respondents have incurred because of the new GTLDs due to cybercrimes and other fraud, the reduced value of intellectual property, and the expense of actions taken to safeguard intellectual property or protect against crimes. Third, the survey should be expanded to seek information about rivalry among TLDs, registry operators, or registrars that has produced better service, higher quality, or more secure products, or lower prices, both before and after the introduction of new gTLDs. So I think I'll just stop there with respect to the survey metric.
Can I respond to this part of it?
Yes.
Cheryl here. Look, I hear what they're saying, although I would criticise the fact that the author of this particular part of the document, if it is indeed a separate author from other parts, is falling into the trap of actually predicting what the outcomes of a survey would be by leading the potential surveyee. If you ask a question on a reduced value of intellectual property, that's vastly different from asking a question on any effect on the value of intellectual property. So without becoming too difficult and pedantic, which I certainly could do on this text, believe me, I could do, I would suggest that this is all very nice, warm, fuzzy and good, and yes, indeed, we would punt this material to where it belongs, which is at the review team and its decision on how far it would want to go in the scope. I don't think that, I mean, we accepted more generically that, yes, there needs to be comprehensiveness and we need to have the interactions between all of these open raw metrics for the three definitions. This that is an interrelationship there, so that's sort of fine.
Mm-hmm.
We could almost annex this particular sage-like wisdom, if it is indeed sage-like wisdom, to the design of the survey with some general points, such as consideration that a survey, if and when it is undertaken, could be significantly expanded, and then just reference some of the high points, if we even needed to, from the comments. I'm all for making surveys get bang for their buck, but I'm also aware that if they're too general, they fail, and if they're too leading, they're inaccurate. So, anyway, that's enough for me getting my knickers in a knot about it.
Thanks, Cheryl. Steve?
Thanks. The very first paragraph that Barry read is the area where I find most fault with the U.S. government's comments, because they have shouldered the burden of cost versus benefits as part of this exercise. And you know, I have calls into the department. I want to ask more about that, because I believe that is a explicit expansion beyond what was in the affirmation of commitments. So I would prefer not to acknowledge the rhetoric of cost versus benefits as we incorporate the USG comments, but instead incorporate them for their substantive value at what we were chartered with by the board and the affirmation of commitments that the U.S. government signed.
Mm-hmm.
So having said that, I believe if you look at page 7 in our document, our original document, here's what we said about our survey of consumer trust. We said it was a survey of perceived consumer trust in the DNS relative to experiences before the gTLD expansion. So we already were measuring before and after, so we simply checked that box from what Barry just read. It was a survey of before and after.
Yeah.
Check the box. We said we would survey the consumer population, and the word consumer for us is a defined term. It's actual and potential Internet users and registrants. So I believe that the USG would have us expand that a little broader to include law enforcement and contract parties. That's the way I read that, and I'm agreeable to that. And then there's finally the actual scope of the survey questions, what kinds of things they ask about. And as you know, we only have a partial list in here, malware, spam, confusion. We have not fleshed out all of the things that would be here, but I you know the reality here. If we don't list everybody's pet peeve in this, we'll get comments that we're not being comprehensive, even though we fully acknowledge that the survey vendor will design lots of questions. So I believe we should put the cook's the laundry list in here of all the things that we hope that the survey vendor will try to assess on a before versus after basis for the survey population of consumers. And we may have to spell out what we meant, actual potential users and registrants and contract parties and law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, I'll close by saying that the target results that we said is that for all survey measures, we said they ought to show improvement, meaning the before versus after show improvement. And I think that still stands. All we're expanding is clarifying the survey population, listing more stuff in the survey questions, and reiterating before versus after as the basis of our target, that improvements be shown. So we can actually incorporate, I think, the USG without acknowledging this cost versus benefit burden that we were never chartered with.
Mm-hmm. Rosemary here. In fact, we earlier discussed the cost versus benefits issue, Steve, in the earlier comments from the U.S. government, and decided that was really out of scope for our work. So we took a clear position which said we're not going to go there, essentially. So taking forward that position, I agree with you that if we go to the practical suggestions rather than the policy commentary in this input, I think we can incorporate most of those practical suggestions.
Just as one final clarification, I didn't say that we want to affirmatively defy the cost versus benefit, but rather sort of set it aside and focus on the substantive improvements we can make to the survey design.
I guess in response to that, I'm saying that earlier we did want to call out quite clearly that cost-benefit area was not something that was in scope. Our scope is to talk about whether the expansion of the new program promotes consumer trust, consumer choice, and competition, whether the expansion incurs costs or benefits for people.
Is it possible to append to that the notion that many of the metrics and targets that we've laid out will be instructive to questions of cost versus benefits, and we're happy to contribute to that effort?
But it's not an effort that's anywhere near this task, I don't think. If you go back to the board resolution and the AOC, the piece that we're doing is looking at measurements and metrics and targets around three definitions. What people do with all of that at the end of the day, I think, happens somewhere else and at some future time. So, Barry, can you take that discussion we've just had and turn it into a response and recommended action?
Yes. Essentially, add the shopping list of items there to be inclusive with what we already have. Take note of an expanded population to the survey. Reiterate before versus after. And that pretty much covers the survey actions.
Mm-hmm. Is everyone happy with that?
Comfortable enough, yep.
Yep.
But
okay.
I really would be critical of us trying to tell the specifics of the survey questions. As I say, I can find plenty of fault with the specifics as they're outlined by the USG.
This is Michael. I'd agree with the laundry list approach and what Barry was going over.
Olivier?
Yeah, thanks, Rosemary. It's Olivier for the transcript. I just wanted to register that. I also do agree that this list here of survey questions really appears to be going into more than micromanagement. It's starting to restrict the actual scope of the whole exercise. You know, it's basically letting not even saying, well, these are the metrics. It's saying, these are the metrics. These are what we want. These are how we should ask the metrics. These are the answers that we want as well. Oh, sorry, not the answers yet.
And sorry, Cheryl here. I just think that it's all very nice preemptive work for the debates that need to happen around the review team table later. Mm. But it's not our job to do that groundwork for them.
Mm-hmm.
They're happy with the laundry list, but...
Okay. Well, let's press on, given we've got about 10 minutes on this call. Barry, will you take us through this next page 12?
Yes, so continuing on, the USG submitted their comment. Lastly, the working group's draft advice document includes some useful metrics on the incidence of domain takedowns, the quantity and relative incidence of fraudulent transactions caused by phishing sites and new gTLDs, and the quantity of relative incidence of complaints regarding an accurate, invalid, or suspect Whois records in the new gTLDs, among others. We recommend inclusion of several specific additional measures that will facilitate the evaluation of whether the expansion of the gTLD program has improved customer trust. These are relative incidence of complaints received by ICANN involving the new gTLDs as well as existing, quantity and relative incidence of malware sites, quantity and relative incidence of domain names and new gTLDs used for botnets, quantity and relative incidence of domain names and the new gTLDs associated with identity theft, associated with spam, the quantity and relative incidence of breach notices, suspensions, and terminations related to legal misconduct of officers of registry operators, incidence of security breaches and new gTLDs, and conducting multiple surveys of consumer confusion rather than conducting a one-time survey as initially proposed. With respect to the three-year targets and most of the measures of consumer trust on pages 6 and 7, USG questions whether the target levels relating to problems or performance issues associated with new gTLD should be set at rates that are lower than the comparable rates that existed before the gTLD expansion, regardless of the amounts of reduction. The number of problems or issues that must be addressed could grow with the increase in new gTLDs, which could overload the systems that are designed to deal with the issues. USG believes that the targets and tolerance for the problems or performance issues should decline substantially with a significant expansion of new gTLDs.
Olivia?
Thank you, Rosemary. It's Olivier for the transcript. The first thought that I had when reading through this list was, my goodness, can all of these actually be collected? Because questions like terminations related to legal misconduct of officers of new gTLD registry operators, I mean, some of these are, I would say, pretty hard to collect, aren't they?
This is Michael. That would be my reaction to this as well, although it would be interesting and could be very useful to have some of these very specific types of bits of information, especially on the illegality side. I don't believe that it could be collected in a way that we would be confident that it really shows the relative incidence of these things.
Rosemary here, and I think a number of these we've actually gone to the spam and phishing with our expansions, our responses to earlier comments. So we may have picked them up. Olivier?
Thanks, Rosemary. Yes, I was going to add, we have picked several of these, but some of these, such as the one I've just mentioned, the legal might be possible in a purely U.S. context, but we have to remember we're dealing with a worldwide thing, and there are some countries where it's just totally impossible to get any information about that. It's going to be really faced with some serious questions here. Thank you.
Rose, Michael?
Yes, and in part answering Olivier, As I read this and listening to Steve's earlier comments, this seems to me to be the laundry list.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are already included in what we have directed as possible subjects for the survey. There are a couple of new things in here that might also be added. But again, it would be more in the context of a survey, I would think, than of, you know, a relative incidence of security breaches and the like.
Rosemary, I think, though, that there's a difference in my mind, at any rate, between the survey questions and this list, which is a data collection list. I think what we need to do is go through the list, and where we've suggested that issues get picked up, say malware and so on, in our earlier work, then we've covered that off. And then in response to things like termination related to legal misconduct, we need, I think, to make a comment, whether it's that we're not sure how that information would be collected, or whether it's that we're trying to come up with a document that could be used across the stakeholder community and for ICANN, not just particular parts of it. I'm not sure what our comment is, but the laundry list approach, for me at any rate, doesn't work with all these items, because the request is that that we add these as measures. So I think our response has got to be quite specific about whether we are prepared to add them, or we don't think they can be added, or whether we have already covered them. Having said all that, at 2 minutes to go with our call, I'm not sure that we can deal with the detail of this. Perhaps for the next call, we start at this point by all of us just having reminded ourselves of what our measures are, with a discussion about whether they're included or not included, or what step we take.
Rosie, just from that point of view, I mean, I'm not uncomfortable about the way some of these issues are written in terms of quality and relative incidence. I don't mind that language.
No.
And where we already have such measures, and if that language is not specific in our own measures, that's sort of a no-brainer as far as I'm concerned. But things like the incidence of security breaches in new GTLDs as well as the existing TLDs, I mean, Olivia and I know very well from our work in DSSA how much fun that would be if we were going to try and suggest it.
Steve?
Hey, thank you. Just a quick one. The very point that Cheryl just made, Cheryl, you'll be surprised how nicely that fits into one of the metrics we already have on page 8, which was the quantity of compliance concerns with respect to applicable national laws.
Mm-hmm.
And we simply say, including, and again, it comes from law enforcement and the GAC, put it right back on them, and say, including security, data security breaches that occur in contravention of, or that that can be observed and reported. Because each nation covers its own security breach notification and security breach definition laws. In fact, in the United States, we have 46 different states who all define it a tiny bit differently as to whether a security breach means that you had to know that personal information made its way out of the enterprise, information that was capable of creating risk of identity theft or financial harm.
There's a big difference.
I think we could expand a couple of our items to pick this one up.
Pardon me. Okay. Well, let's all of us have a look at, just remind ourselves of all our metrics and targets, and then we can come back to this list and agree how we're going to handle it at the beginning of the next call. Olivier, sorry?
Thanks, Rosemary. It's Olivier for the transcript. Mentioning security breaches, I couldn't help not mentioning, does the one with a task count as one or many? Sorry, you don't need to answer that, of course.
You're a devil.
It's a tough one, you know.
Anyway, it hasn't started too well, so it might be very good to actually track those. Yeah, definitely. Thanks.
Okay. So we'll come back to this when we're fresh. I just want to finish the call by going back to the letter from GNSO to GAC. Do we now have any thoughts on what we want to do, or whether we are content to just let the process go forward the way it is, which is that the matter would be considered by GNSO Council at its 7th of June meeting?
There's no choice, is there?
I don't think so, Cheryl, and I think it's best not to exercise ourselves with process that's going to be handled elsewhere. I think the work that we're doing in reviewing the public comments is, frankly,
more important.
Yep.
Yep.
And the other matter that I wanted to bring up was Barry, and thank you for this, Barry, reminded me that we did have a comment from Wendy Seltzer from some months ago in our working group discussions. It's difficult for Wendy to join our calls given the timing of the calls, but I would like to ask Barry to just bring that comment forward for consideration at the next call, so that we can, even if Wendy's not able to join us, actually discuss the matter and form a consensus position on it. Is there any
yes.
other business? Sorry, Barry.
I'll just make sure to add in as a specific agenda item.
Okay, right. Thank you. Any other business from anyone else? Seeing no hands, then we will say goodbye for today, and we're reconvening on the 5th of June next week.
Yep.
Thanks, everybody.
Great. Thank you,
everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks, bye. Thanks, bye.